My name's Matt Florell. I've been working with telephony equipment, software, hardware, junk, anything and everything for about the last 6 years. Came from a background more of the data side of things. My first T1 circuit, I was absolutely baffled when I got asked all the questions. You know, do you want loop start? Do you want wing start? Do you want PRI? You know, coming from data, it's one thing. You get data. And a lot of people getting into telephony have a lot of the same problems. But I've overcome most of those. I've been doing some development work with Asterisk. I certainly don't work for Digium, but I've been concentrating in the last 3 years on call center solutions, getting into larger enterprise level. Now, enterprise level for a call center may be, you know, 300 seats, whereas enterprise for a, you know, a corporate infrastructure may be 5,000 actual phone lines. But the utilization of resources in call centers is completely different. So there are a lot of, you know, trade-offs when you're talking one versus the other. Usually, like the inverse of lines to handsets is true for one or the other. But enough about me, on to the subject at hand, open source or proprietary. So what is open source software? How many people out there, show of hands, use open source software and know about it? Good, that's a lot. There are a lot of very prevalent ones out there. Firefox is pretty well known. OpenOffice game, of course, Linux, the operating system. FreeBSD, all sorts of other things like that, are open source. But a lot of people have misconceptions about open source. Like, they think that all open sources are the same, and everything is the GPL, and there is no flexibility, when in fact there are 54 official open source licenses that are recognized by the OSI. They all have some different provisions. I'll go over some of the basics. BSD license is quite permissive in what you can do with it. Apache is another different one, and Mozilla is a little newer because, of course, Mozilla was just founded a few years ago from the ashes of Netscape. Open source does not necessarily mean cost-free. There are a lot of companies such as embedded software companies for you know, firmware chips, things like that, that have open source software, but the software licenses do cost money. It's not GPL, but they use one of the other open source recognized ones. Another thing that confuses a lot of people when they first hear about it, you can have dual licensing, triple licensing, quadruple licensing. If you're the copyright holder, you can license the same piece of software different ways. Asterisk PBX is one in our field that's pretty well known for this. MySQL database and SendMail are a couple more in the Linux or Unix world that people know about. The restrictions that are common amongst all of them, the redistribution of code has to be free. The source code included with distributed software, as in if the customer buys it, and it is an open source license, you have to include the software with it. Derivative works must be allowed. There are different licensing restrictions on derivative works depending upon the kind of license you do it under. No discrimination against person, group, or field of endeavor, meaning you can't say, I'd like this to be used by anybody but telemarketers. There are people who have tried that, and they get slapped in the face and because it's not permitted. Distribution of the license without restriction. A license cannot be only for one piece of software. You can't say, this is, you know, Acme Widget A, and we're going to release a license for every single one. It has to be something that has more than one piece of software that can be used for it. You cannot restrict other software is distributed with or used with. You can't say, for instance, that this is only open source if you use it on Linux, and if you use the same source on Windows, it's not. And the license must be technology or language neutral, meaning you can't restrict it to a specific programming language. This is all abbreviated from the open source website. I just wanted to give an overview. Now on to proprietary systems. They've got a lot of advantages because they were first to market. Cisco, Avaya, they're the field leaders in IP telephony, or the companies they purchased, I should say. And they were involved in setting the first standards, so obviously they've got a lot of experience. They've got the capital invested in it and the commitment to invest capital in it to support it and keep it going. All the components of the same brand are usually guaranteed to work together. If you get a Cisco phone, you know, an IP phone and a Cisco call manager system, they will work together, and if they don't, they're going to fix it. Almost all existing VoIP hard phones on the market are proprietary. The exception to that is the you know, using a standard ATA, you know, an analog telephone. If you use an adapter, it's a standard analog phone. Or the, I believe it's the PA 168 or 1688 chipset. I'll get into that a little more later. Also, proprietary systems tend to have a more polished interface. If you've seen what some of the open source interfaces look like, they look a lot like one of my first programming endeavors. Disadvantages. You're tied to one manufacturer a lot of the times. If you buy an Avaya, you have to get support from an Avaya-authorized company. You can't go to somebody else. You can't fix it yourself. And the product life is tied to them. If they decide that they want to end of life it, then that's it. Sometimes they leave, although it's very rare, they will leave customers out in the cold because they don't want to support it anymore. It costs too much to support it for what the customers are able to spend, and because it is proprietary, there is no way around that. Product changes can only be made by authorized partners or the manufacturer. There's no way to see how things work. There are some exceptions to this using templates or some limited programming languages, voice XML on the Cisco side, where you can influence how it works and change some of the display options and things like that, but you're still limited to a certain extent. Also, they may not support the specific protocol you need. Cisco did not embrace SIP across their entire product line immediately. Sometimes using SIP required a few hoops to be jumped through on some of the earlier Cisco IP phones, which was not the case with some of the other manufacturers at the same time. Advantages of open source. Well, anybody can look at the code, see how it works, update it, and tune it to how their organization needs to use the software. Some open source licenses offer free use even for commercial implementations. You can certainly use Asterisk for, you know, 1,000 Asterisk servers serving 1 million customers and not pay a penny in licensing costs. There are a lot of larger open source projects such as Serre or Asterisk that have large communities of developers, rather advanced developers that can administrate and operate the software at a rather high level, but that's not always true. hardware specifications allow for easy development. There really aren't that many hardware specifications. As I mentioned, the PA-168 chipset for phones, it's a specification and a firmware that was created in China and is used in about a dozen different manufacturers. It is actually a fully open firmware, and the only one I know of that's in wide manufacturing, where you can actually write your own protocols, write your own software that'll work with these set of phones. There's an Asterisk protocol called IAX, and some of the only phones that work with it are the PA-168, because somebody took a few weeks and saw that the code was open and was able to program it to work with that specific protocol. Zaptel is another big example of that. The Zapata Telephony site, which I believe is zapatatelephony.org, actually has downloadable schematics of a T1 board. So you could actually build your own T1 interface connections and it's open source. The hardware itself is open source. The drivers interface it with Linux, or actually it's worked with FreeBSD, and there's even a Windows port of it, are all open source. That's fueled companies like Digium and Sangoma, and I think Linotech just jumped into the market as well, and a few others to actually get their T1 and other PSTN interface cards to work with the Zaptel library, and has really bloomed into a rather large industry. There are also choices of hundreds of different VoIP phones when you use open source. You're not limited to, you know, Cisco only, Avaya only, whereas on Cisco and Avaya, sometimes some features won't work, some specifications aren't exactly the same. You know, a system such as Asterisk is not exactly perfect when it comes to its SIP implementation, but at least it is able to function rather well with several different kinds of phones. There, at last count, I had 4 dozen, almost 50 phones that were able to be used with Asterisk. Disadvantages. Documentation, that's the dirty word in open source land. It's either not complete or it doesn't exist. There wasn't, I think the first Asterisk book was 2 years ago. I think there have been maybe one or two more since then. And they aren't current. The development is so rapid that you don't have a complete and full documentation of you know, available features to be able to work with. And that really hampers the implementation of a lot of open source projects, especially some of the smaller ones, like SIP Express Router, SER, and a few others that exist. It's really difficult to get into it. You know, you can look at the source code all you want, and if you understand how the source code works, it's not really a problem. But if you're just getting into it to try it, it's somewhat difficult to enter with documentation that may be a year old or is incomplete or incompatible. The product lines are not as mature. Well, that stems from you know, Cisco and Avaya being some of the leaders in it, and they've been at this IP telephony for almost a decade. In some cases, longer with their subsidiaries. But, you know, Asterisk was formed 4 years ago, and it was started kind of as a side project, and it sort of has grown very, very quickly to a rather large installed base with not as much time to mature or, you know, work some of the coding inefficiencies or bugs out before it got to, you know, a point of no return where you couldn't really modify that stuff. Some projects have very few high-level people, and since they don't really work for you, if you're somebody just using the code, they don't necessarily have to help you. Some of the higher-level people are anything but helpful, and if you ask the wrong kind of question, they will curse at you on a forum or yell at you on a conference call. I've seen that happen, and that is one of the, you know, bad parts of open source communities, that there are people like that. There's no guarantee of functionality or future fixes. There's no corporate ownership of the code, meaning if something goes wrong, you never know if it's going to be fixed or not. That can be bad for some companies who would be deploying this through a rather large scale and want to have some kind of guarantee that you know, things will, that an entity will be there to fix it if something goes wrong. Ways around that are hiring a consulting company or hiring some of the higher level code gurus that created the software. Or in the case of a company like Digium, they offer a commercial dual license where you actually do get guarantees, you do have a license you have to purchase, but it is based upon open source software. Another issue with open source is it's difficult to support heavily customized code. Because the code's out there, anybody can go in and tinker with it. That's good and bad, meaning, you know, somebody goes in there and adds 10,000 lines of code and basically changes variables, changes everything, it's not really the same piece of code anymore. So if something happens and that head programmer gets hit by a bus, the company could be pretty much screwed. There have been more and more large organizations switching to open source or even trying it for different pieces of their organization. One of them that happened a couple of months ago in Texas, Sam Houston University. They've been switching from their Cisco Nortel split solutions over to Asterisk and have 1,600 phones moved over as of about a month ago. Basically to lower cost to make a total integrated solution. And so that they could have easier administration of everything because it's open source. Finality is a larger company from California who's been acquiring people and other companies for the last year. They have over 15,000 phones spread across a few thousand systems that are out in production, all using Asterisk. And of course, Vonage. I couldn't go without a mention of Vonage, who uses Asterisk for their voicemail system. It's over 1 million voicemail boxes on the open source Asterisk platform, which speaks pretty highly to at least its voicemail scalability, having 1,000 or so voicemail boxes per machine. But they've proven that it can be economically viable to at least use a portion of your network as open source IP telephony. Open source might be a good fit for your company if you want to control your code. If you've got a good mind share of people and they want to highly, integrate the system into your existing infrastructure, that's the way to go. If you try to do this with a closed source solution, you're looking at a lot of very in-depth and very restricting non-disclosure agreements with proprietary manufacturers. You're looking at limited code release from those manufacturers. You're looking at a lot of issues with different versions and getting different version controls from them, where you don't really have that problem with open source because it's all out in the open. If you have adequate staff for managing and developing a system, or if you have an outsourced company that could do that, open source might also be a good solution. Or if you want to easily add a single items such as voicemail, conference calling, call center, or IVR, where it would be cost prohibitive or is simply not possible with your current system. One of my clients had a concerto system that was entirely inbound, and they weren't able to cheaply add outbound functionality to that, so they went ahead and went with Asterisk and basically doubled their seats all with outbound, and they have it tied in through SIP channels into their concerto system. So there is interoperability, and it was a way for them to get open source in. They had a new CTO coming in who was Linux friendly, I guess you'd say, and he wanted to give it a try, and they've been running on it for about the last 6 months, and it's been running great. You might want to avoid open source if your company has strict guidelines for the programs that are allowed to come in. There are some companies I've talked to that say absolutely everything has to be coded in C++ and ASP, no exceptions. Well, there aren't that many IP telephony applications that are written in those programming languages. Or they have to pass a strict code control. They have to go to an outside auditing firm to make sure for security that the code passes and that it can be used in a secured environment. And that's a little difficult with open source, especially if you're moving, you've got a moving target to work with. If you don't have the staff to support it, you don't have the mind share that can handle it, or you don't want to dedicate the resources, if you're a small shop, and you only have one IT person, but you've got 50 employees, and that one IT person has to go around fixing computers all day. They don't really have time, possibly, to mess with changing an IVR system 3 times a week. So something that would be a little more user-friendly and possibly proprietary might be a better choice. A specific open-source project might not be in wide production use. Some environments, it's very difficult to do testing until you get it in a live environment. One of those is the call center space. And you don't know if the package that you're using will work for the scale that you want to put it in because, for instance, only 10 companies are using it in production. But even if it's exactly what you want. So either you will have to go into some extra hours to figure out a way to test it before you put it live, or you could go with a proprietary solution that's already guaranteed to work. If you're worried about a competitor being able to use the same software as you're supporting, I ran into this with another one of my clients. They were absolutely paranoid about the fact that one of their competitors might find out they were using open source and then they would be using it too, which didn't really make sense to me, but in their industry, they didn't want another company in their industry to be able to use all these tools that they were paying a little money into to have somebody develop the tools that they needed for open source. A very, very light comparison of two products that are really not necessarily equals, but are often compared to one another. Companies go with either one of these for very different reasons. Cisco Call Manager being proprietary and Asterisk being open source. There are more protocols available in Asterisk. If you have a very widely distributed network that for some reason uses MGCP phones, IAX phones, SIP phones, and Cisco skinny phones, SCCP, then you would have to go with Asterisk. Cisco Call Manager supporting all those protocols would have to use an Asterisk box or another piece of hardware. Asterisk, of course, is cheaper. Cisco Call Manager has a much more refined administration GUI. Asterisk's built-in administration GUI is currently being worked on, but it is in beta 1 stage, and it doesn't exactly work very well. Cisco Call Manager has been around for a very long time, several years, and it is well tested. It is very well supported with Cisco equipment. And on the Asterisk side, you don't have to worry about the port licenses or the kind of licenses like you have to worry about with Cisco, in both in terms of support for supporting a specific number of ports, as well as the actual grade of equipment that you would have to purchase on the Cisco side. Asterisk doesn't care whether you have a Pentium 2 or a quad-core Pentium Intel Core 2 Duo Extreme. It's going to run the same no matter what, whereas on Cisco hardware, it's not necessarily the case, depending upon the class of hardware that you have. What I've found out from the clients and that I've worked with and the people I've talked to is a mixed solution is the best way to go. Since, obviously in the handset side, if you're going to go voice over IP, you pretty much got to go with a proprietary vendor. A lot of people choose Cisco for that or Polycom, which is a lot like the Cisco. But it's really, really hard unless you're going with something like soft phones for everybody or for some reason you want to use the PA-168, which is not necessarily the most reliable phone out there. It's very difficult to go only 100% open source. Some of the companies I've worked with have switched their voicemail or just their IVR over to an open source solution, or in terms of one company, they were using SARE to distribute calls to their SIP-based IVR, and they wanted to add another SIP-based IVR. But at the time, the company didn't have a good load balancer. So there's easy using SIP. There is easy integration between most proprietary IP switches and appliances. Telephony systems conform to standards. And you can take the strengths of each. If your proprietary system has a wonderful user interface for administrating, adding phones, changing things, and you want to add an IVR to it that does database lookups across, three customer databases, doing the the telephone provisioning and the voicemail on one proprietary system and doing the IVR that would interface with such as your billing and accounting systems on open source might actually end up saving you money and being a more well-rounded way of dealing with whatever problems you have with integration. So what I usually recommend is, because a lot of this open source software, in fact all of it, to try it, costs pretty much nothing. And if you have time and people that are willing to try it, then you should try it out or assign somebody to try it out. A lot of the companies that I've talked with that have moved over to an open source platform, or at least for one function or another, started out with somebody from the inside, sometimes operating without the knowledge of the CTO or the IT director, and maybe pilfering a few lines or adding a SIP account here and there, and actually setting something up, doing some demos, doing some testing, and then actually putting something on it, and then the IT director or whoever there is higher up says, "This is wonderful. How long did this take you, and can you scale it up to the entire organization?" And they said, "And how much licensing will cost?" And then they'll say, "It's asterisk. Licensing costs nothing, and scaling it up won't be a problem." One of the companies that did an IVR based in asterisk did that. It started out from a single IT employee who was tinkering around with it because they saw a mention of it online on the website, and they downloaded it. And they had a Linux box. They just loaded it on the Linux box, and they tried it out, hooked their SIP, got a SIP account on their Cisco call manager, set it up with their asterisk box, and they were able to route calls to and from the Cisco call manager to the asterisk box, and did all of it on their own, some of it in his free time, but it's a way that you can, without having to budget for it, without having to plan a tremendous amount of time, sometimes figure out more economical or more flexible solutions for some of your problems. Yeah, there are actually some downloadable VMware images that you can grab. some incompatibilities you need to be aware of with using VMware is that it's not real time. It can't control the clock, and doing things like IX trunking some music on hold and conferencing sometimes either won't work or will result in distorted audio. But it is a wonderful test bed, especially for doing something like voicemail or IVR, where you could actually have three virtual machines of asterisk running on a single Windows box. You can SIP trunk them together. That's where you get into the wacky stuff. Have the same machine talking to itself and loop calls through three different instances. Yeah. That's fun stuff.
Let's say that the process is life for a certain number of years. You've got total cost of ownership. How much will these costs in relation to the total cost of ownership? Because, for example, in the storage area, you know, people make these huge sand arrays. Well, the people they sell it to find that about 90% of the cost of storage is the cost of managing storage. And the cost of the equipment, what it looks like, when you look at it, relative to the price of going to the store, what it looks like, it's relatively small.
It really depends upon the application. Depending upon what the customer needs in terms of requirements. If they have a system where they have everything they need out of the box, whether it be asterisk, a small, say, a dozen people, if they go with an asterisk system, you could literally get a very simplistic asterisk system that has phones and voicemail, and just take an old, a machine that you would buy at Best Buy or Circuit City, stick a asterisk at home CD in it, and with a few clicks, reading through the manual, you would be set up. And it's only man hours that you're paying for, and you're not limited in the number of ports that you can have other than by the speed of your hardware. And for something like that, open source is clearly a lot cheaper. But it's all case-by-case basis. And it's who you go with. Asterisk consultants, as I've discovered recently, are more and more in demand and are demanding a lot more money than they used to be a year ago, sometimes double or triple what they were getting paid a year ago. There are a lot more people getting into it, but the people with experience are really being sought after, so they're getting to the rates that it costs so much, you know, about on par with what a consulting would be on a proprietary side. So yeah, in terms of labor, if you're looking for the high end, you're going to pay for it, whether it's open source or not. And there are potential clients that, I'm of course an advocate of open source, but there are potential clients of mine that I've recommended not to go with Asterisk. They had different needs and different, requirements, and it really wasn't a good fit for them. You know, they didn't have in-house personnel. They relied entirely on a company that does contracting. So they would have had to find new contracting. They would have had to basically redo almost everything. Instead of going with a proprietary solution. And from their expectations and their staffing levels and the quality of service, the level of service that they were to require, Asterisk really didn't fit what they needed. So, I do from time to time recommend proprietary, but, yeah.
This question's kind of more an Asterisk question than a can Asterisk support, let's say, 8-2-3 endpoints?
I haven't personally done that. There are a couple of different implementations of H323. I know people who have gotten that to work, also in conjunction with MGCP and some other protocols. But
if we install the driver protocols, we might be able to do that.
Right, and actually, in some cases, it depends upon what your equipment or what your vendor uses. Because one version, one H323 may not work, but the other one may. That's another option that you have with open source. You've got multiple instances of, the H323 library out there. Something like that would never happen with a proprietary vendor. They wouldn't spend their time, developing two completely different sets of libraries at the same time and maintaining them for their single, their single product. That's something that just doesn't happen unless they acquire another company. And then that code base, gets molded into theirs. They usually, when that happens, they'll end of life one of them. So.
I'd like to speak to that question to some extent. As far as supporting different protocols on multiple sides of the switch. The switching floor of Asterisk is entirely protocol dependent. So it's not based on one single report protocol. So really any flag that you call the any different protocol that supports stuff like an SIP phone and use like a T1 from a Mudwoods backhaul to PSTN or like an S-A-T-3 transfer. Protective is an issue with any protocol that specifically this. Most of the issues are pretty well smoothed out. But as far as having phones that are different protocol, like having SIP phones, H-3-3 phones from the same network, they can call each other, they can be conferenced with, calls coming in from T1. So all that's really independent after abstract call right away.
When you
have
a CPU time to build conversions.
The protocol part's not really the hard part. It's usually the codec. The transcoding is pretty heavy, but the actual conversion from, say, MGCP to IAX or to SIP is pretty minimal. It all comes down to the audio, and that's true of most systems. Yeah?
I was just going to ask this question I had. In terms of scalability of hardware, when you're not doing transcoding,
A program like SER, SIP Express Router, which is something that's very different from what Asterisk is, where it's only handling the call signaling protocols, not actually handling the audio, is extremely scalable. One single SER server can handle thousands of calls going through it at once. When you're talking Asterisk, it's a whole different ball of wax. You got to talk about what your needs are, what the codecs are. Are you going to do native bridging? Are you going to do, bridging that goes through the switch? For call center applications where you have to be able to monitor and you have to be able to, record, you generally, there are a few exceptions to this, but you generally have to have the stream go through the machine. If you're using an appliance like, I believe, Ranch Networks has a sniffer that can record SIP and allow real-time monitoring as well, you kind of avoid that. But you're still limited to somewhat with the capacity. Digium, the owner of Asterisk, the ones that dual license it, have placed a limit of 240 channels per machine. That is their limit to supporting it. They will allow it to go higher than that, of course, on their commercial version, but you have to pay extra, and it's not guaranteed to work. I've personally had over 600 channels on a single Astra server before it died after a few hours. It was doing about 35,000 calls an hour, so it was pretty heavily going through the actions of some broadcast dialing tests to other Astra servers at the time, actually. But in terms of scalability for Asterisk, it's just you add more boxes. And, especially in the call center space, you just keep adding more boxes to get to the capacity you need, whether it's, two servers. If you're doing, very aggressive dialing, you probably need two servers for 100 agents. If you need to have 1,000 agents, well, then you might need 20 servers. It all depends on, the kind of calling you're doing. Inbound is a different animal, even still. Using IVRs is different as well. They all have different, requirements. The amount of recording you do, the transcoding that happens, it all greatly influences what kind of capacity you're able to squeeze out of a box. It's customer specific.
Yeah. Is there an open source tool with spreadsheets somewhere that you can enter in? Here's my request. Membrane processor power. How do you decide?
You can talk to me after the presentation. No. I've actually written a test suite for my software suite, VichyDial. It requires quite a lot of hardware to do the testing. For each box you have, you need three equally sized boxes to be able to do the testing on it. But I've set up a few lab environments. I tested and successfully burned out a Dell 4 processor dual core, so eight cores. I burned it out after about 5 weeks. Two of the processor cores actually literally burned up. Again, reinforcing my opinion about Dell, but. it's something that needs to be done sort of on a case by case basis. The company I was doing this test for instance, was going to require calling recording of all calls. They were going to have their agents be SIP and they were going to have their phone lines be PRIs. So I had to get an octal, you know, Sangoma card to have 8 T's going into it. I had 2 other boxes with quad T's on it that were fake answering the calls. And I had a third box that was pretending to be the SIP agents that were logging into this box. So I wrote a script, a program to basically have the agents, the fake agents, log in and take calls, and the calls would be of varying lengths, and it would record the calls and how long they would last, and it would be reproducible. So I could test different configurations of asterisk. It's basically a way of testing asterisk to see, you know, if turning this thing off will make this specific setup for this specific client work better. And in terms of, you know, comparing one call center to another, some of the changes affected one greatly, but affected the other one not at all. So it's really, you know, pretty difficult to estimate. You know, 240 channels is a good rule of thumb. But in a case where you have something like a termination provider, like a Vonage or a Mini Vonage, that's got, you know, 1,000 customers, they may have 240 concurrent channels, but you've only got maybe 10 new calls being placed every minute. Whereas if you were in a call center, you had 240 concurrent channels, but you had 1,000 calls being placed every minute and hung up. You know, there's a very, very big difference in, you know, the call build-up and tear-down, especially when there are different codecs being used. It uses a lot more CPU power when you're placing more calls per minute than if you're placing less. So saying, you know, 240 channels for a call center is actually has more of a hardware requirement than 240 calls for a termination provider. And it's not really, you know, it's not really that way in the call center space, because a lot of it is either solid state, or a lot of processing is done on the card, so that's taken out of it. You know, Dialogic cards are, of course, thousands of dollars, and, you know, the T1 cards that you can buy for open source systems are significantly cheaper, but they don't do the same kind of processing on the card, so it makes it a little less scalable per machine, but a lot more flexible in other ways. So,
what card do you use for your asterisk servers?
I use all kinds.
Digiums or not?
I've tested Digium. I've tested Rhino. The Digium clones. I can't even remember their name. And of course Sangoma. The best ones, you know, are reflected in the warranty. Sangomas have a 5-year warranty. Digiums have a 2. They're both, you know, they both use the Zaptel drivers, but it all depends upon, you know, what you're shooting for in terms of your hardware. There are some offerings from Digium that aren't matched in the other two carriers, depending upon what kind of TDM configuration you want. Yeah.
How tight is the major vendors in terms of thinking of Avaya, Cisco, and Intel?
They all adhere to various degrees. Some of them extend the protocol to the point where certain features won't work on one that'll work on the other. You know, it's a lot like the old digital lines days, where you take an old comm dial phone and it would not work on anything but comm dial, but it had a certain set of specifications. Even so, it wouldn't work on other systems that supposedly adhered to those certain set of specifications. It's a little different with SIP, because you've got, you know, aside from having, 2,000 pages of documentation on SIP standard, you've got all of these different ways of sending messages and different ways for things to mean different things depending upon how you're sending them or where they're coming from. Like even just seeing, you know, if Bob over there is on the phone and lighting up a little LED, there are different ways of doing that depending upon the platform you're using. And one phone may not work with the other phone system's way of sending those messages around because it's too flexible.
Which vendors provide phones on SIP?
I know that Cisco does. I know that Polycom does. Mitel was a bit problematic. Iwatsu, forget about it. Avaya, haven't tested.
Avaya and Cisco all support.
Yeah, I've heard Avaya has SIP support, but usually their phones are a little more expensive for what you get, so at least in my opinion.
But you got it.
Right, right.
So I think those SIP staff is out of date, apparently. With the newer staff, they have those physical lines.
I personally go with Polycom. But that's a whole other discussion. They're very similar. I know Cisco and Avaya both use the speakerphone technology. They license the technology from Polycom in their speakerphones. Several other vendors do too, because Polycom's known for speakerphones. They weren't the most open company to deal with the Asterisk community at first, but they've since created an Asterisk sales position and actively are courting the Asterisk community. So they've been opening up their functionality. I know, you know, there are, what, 2,000 option settings in a Polycom XML configuration file. You can do so many things with it, you know, get different things to work different ways using a Polycom. But Cisco, of course, uses a different way of configuring things. And with Cisco, of course, you have to purchase a per-phone license, whether you're using Asterisk or not. You purchase a SIP license for Cisco. That doesn't exist for Polycom. I believe it's the same way for Avaya, but I'm not really as in tune with Avaya as I am with Cisco or Polycom.
Just to expand on what you were talking about standardization, one of the things that I think Cisco as well is those messages that send across the network, even though there are different ways of doing it, except you create a different message, and you, but once the message is received by the other system, it's understood, and decides the other messages if it doesn't understand it. So, for example, if you want to do like info, send an info message, and create another one, say, Mac, and the other system doesn't understand it, it just decides that, but
right.
It still works. Yeah. I think the issue is the fact that most companies are saying that SAG is not doing certain things the right way, or maybe it's not, the RSC doesn't do certain things the right way, or the RSC doesn't have certain features like shared line appearances for Cisco IP phone, but not 6E and other phones. Shared line appearances were not in the RSC until 2 months ago, a few years ago. And Cisco has the shared line appearances, and the way to do it is completely different from the RFC. So the RFC has to keep up to date with the way how people want to do certain things.
Yeah, proprietary vendors have a lot of advantages when it comes to things like that. They can go outside of the spec, and they can do things differently just to get it working. You know, when Cisco first started offering SIP phones, they had a lot of customized ways of doing things, like you know, for paging everybody, or even for just showing, shared line appearances, status of extensions, things like that. They had to create ways of doing it, and because they had a closed system and were able to say, you know, this is Cisco, and we've got Cisco Call Manager, and these things are Cisco, and they all work together. We're able to say, you know, well, we'll guarantee that the Cisco stuff will work, but if you plug an Avaya phone in, that stuff probably won't work because they do that differently. You know, the voice and the placing of calls and stuff like that is still pretty universal because that was, you know, specified very early on. But the more advanced functionality, you know, sending messages, the different kinds of infos that you can send and the way that they expect output to be sent back to them can be different from, vendor to vendor. So.
One other thing too about Asterisk and support for SIP is that Asterisk, like the other electric personal implementations, really only supports the base functionality of SIP in a lot of cases. So as you're looking at whatever your requirements are for SIP, you can send your phones or from your phones to your PBX and vice versa, evaluate the completeness of the SIP implementation, even on the servers, because with Asterisk, generally, we use Asterisk as a test that or kind of think of it as a measuring stick for how well it supports the protocol. And that's not really the case with SIP on Asterisk. One example that is the SIP message method, which lets you send text between endpoints. And the way that it's supported by master is not consistent with the way the RFC's written, whereas if it did it right, we would be able to send that message to a phone from the server or from another phone at any time. An asterisk actually has to have a call driver before you can send a message to the phone, which is, I think, probably kills 90% of the application opportunities for that functionality. So, I guess the point there is to look at what's available even on the server side as you can select a protocol for your call phone.
Yeah, that is one of the big problems with Asterisk, and there are a few active developers that are working on creating more standardized SIP implementations, SIP stacks for Asterisk. There have been a lot of issues. When they first got SIP up and running on Asterisk, it was able to take calls and place calls, and that was pretty much it. It's never been 100% compatible with the actual SIP IRCs. The goals have really not been to pour a lot of development time into that because it works good enough for most people. They are working on it. I know it's not always the prettiest thing. I know some of the implementations of how they've gotten at least one of the kinds of shared line appearances to work is pretty darn ugly in Asterisk. As some other things are, but it's not a closed system, so they have to have different ways of doing things. And making a 100% compatible, 100% compliant with the RFC SIP would basically break functionality with several of the phones that it currently works with, which is an issue. And being able to do anytime messaging would also require a tremendous amount of change in how Asterisk actually handles, how a call is handled, how it handles its processes in terms of logging and things like that, because it's not really set up to handle that. And that's why there are other projects out there I didn't mention. There's Yate, which is another telephony engine. There's FreeSwitch, which is something that was started by some former Asterisk developers that had also forked off Asterisk to OpenPBX, which is just an Asterisk fork. And there are a couple of other very little-known ones that are out there, not very wide distribution, but that some of them don't have the same kind of limitations or the same kind of things that have been built into it at first. Of course, they're not as widely spread. Some of them that I've seen testing on are a lot more efficient, but they don't have the level of functionality that Asterisk has in terms of its flexibility. So while Asterisk is pretty much, when somebody says open source telephony, Asterisk is what people in the industry think of, it's not a fully 100% mature product yet. It's constantly evolving, and when they add things, it does make it more complex. Some of the modularization that they've added to it has certainly helped to where you can choose, pick and choose what parts of it you want active and what parts you don't. As some of the new SIP stacks come out, I'm aware of at least two development SIP stacks that are kind of heading in different directions in terms of what they're trying to do. One of them is actually where you'll specify the kind of hardware you have, and it'll cater how it works to the kind of phone that it's talking to. The other one is more of a direct attempt to comply more wholly with the RFCs without breaking too much other stuff. So, that's what happens when you have open source. Things don't always stay consistent, but you do have a much more flexible platform. In terms of proprietary, it all depends upon your business goals and what you're willing to accept as a risk, and what means the most to you in terms of what you should choose. Anybody else? Sounds like they're done over there.
Hey,
12:30. Time for lunch.